Sometimes you feel so alone and overwhelmed, you don't know where to turn. These days, it seems like there is no end to our problems. We invite you to connect with Silent Unity, the 24-hour prayer ministry, where someone is waiting to pray with you right now. Since 1890, Silent Unity has always been there. No judgment or dogma, just someone affirming the best for you. Call 816-969-2000 today. You can also connect online at unityprayervigil.org.
Exploring our oneness with Spirit and each other. Unity Online Radio. Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions with Paul John Roach, minister of Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Discover the universal principles present in all the world's religions and take an incredible journey to new understanding. Now, here is your host, Paul John Roach.
So hello and welcome to World Spirituality on the Unity Online Radio Network. Yes, I'm your host, Paul John Roach, coming to you from Unity Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Today we turn our focus to Native American spirituality, the diverse and cultural and spiritual traditions of the original inhabitants of this continent. And although they are diverse, there are many commonalities, and we'll find out about those in a minute. And although there are a multiplicity of nations, many share a similar spiritual outlook. And actually, many of them are very similar to our unity teachings. And the emphasis is on our essential unity with the one great spirit and the sanctity of creation. And another is the power of our words and our acts, and that honor and respect for creation and each other are essential components to living a healthy life. And we can apply those ideas and principles very much in our society today, which seems to be in some way off kilter, and we can use it a little bit more honor, I think, and respect, certainly more civility in our culture. The vibrancy and subtlety of Native American traditions and practices are also very attractive features, and many of us have been called to study and participate in rituals like the sweat lodge, dance, and art, fascinating traditions. So joining me to talk about this today is teacher and wise man D.F. D. Weinman. He was born in Fort Bliss, in Texas, has lived in Ruidoso in New Mexico and El Paso before moving here to Fort Worth, Texas. He studied for many years with elders of the Apache Nation and served in the military for over 30 years. Retired now, he shares his teaching with those who wish to learn. And Dee has made a deep study of how cultures throughout the world share deep core understanding of the nature of reality. And so that's a fascinating subject too. So it's a pleasure to welcome Dee Weinman to today's show. Welcome, Dee.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So the first question I have for you is, you've had quite a fascinating life, haven't you?
Well, yeah, I guess you could say that. Most people look at me and go, no, you couldn't have done all that. But I think anybody, if they review their life when they get to my age, will figure out that they've seen and done a lot of strange things.
Okay, so what's the strangest thing you've done?
Sat on a nuclear warhead.
Sat on it? Just like Dr. Strangelove, right?
Exactly. One of my jobs in the military was an ADM technician, and we had storage sites. And, of course, you know, when Dr. Strangelove comes out, who can resist a chance to do that? Yeah. Nowadays, everybody has cameras. They'd be filmed. They'd be Twittered out. Back then, if they knew, they'd have blocked me up and buried the key.
So, yeah, wonderful stuff. So now you're retired, but it sounds like you're not actually retired. You're still very active.
Well, you have to stay active. If you don't, you might as well just be buried. You move from one thing to another. Yeah, that's one of the things I learned growing up on the reservations. There's always something to learn. There is always something to be taught, and there's always something to do.
Yes. We know T.S. Eliot said old men should be explorers, and I've always liked that line. And, of course, young men should be explorers, too. But you don't give up exploring, right? You remain teachable, and that's something we talk a lot about at Unity here, is that as long as you have breath within you, you're still learning. You know, we remain teachable because there's always new things to learn and understand, right? This universe is a miraculous place, and so wonder and awe, I think, are very important aspects of spirituality, you know, to be blown over by how amazing everything is and what God has created.
Yes, and, you know, it's amazing as you get older, you rediscover the things that your elders taught you, that the world taught you, that God taught you when you were a child. As a child, you're just so full of energy, so full of curiosity, and I guess you call it know-it-all. You don't really listen.
Right.
But as you get older, those old lessons come forward, and you sit there and you go, gee, what I could have done if I'd only understood.
I think it was Oscar Wilde that says that youth is wasted on the young, right?
If it wasn't for the young, who would we have to be old later on?
Yeah, that's true. But it's also true that we understand at a certain level when we're younger, and then we deepen it as we go older. I think we realize the significance of things that we either took for granted or dismissed when we were younger. But it's like a spiral, isn't it? It comes around again to look at it. And each time we come around the spiral, we get another opportunity to observe those things, and we see them often in a very different way now.
Right. You really don't understand until you've raised your own children. And then you really understand when you get to raise grandkids.
Yeah.
And you're always being taught by the nieces and the nephews. I mean, out of the mouth of babes comes truisms constantly. You just may not remember them.
Right. Yeah, I've got two grandchildren myself right now, and it has been a total joy, you know, to see them. And to notice my daughter being a mom, you know, that's a pleasure too, isn't it? And seeing the whole flow of the way it unfolds, you know, and there'll be others after me, after I've gone, and there's that continuity, I think. And I think Native American spirituality is very much into that, isn't it? The continuity of life, the tradition, and the fact that, you know, in a sense that it's all here now because... although there is time in one sense, there's also that timelessness. So we can tune into our ancestors and tune into wisdom that may not be here physically, but it's definitely here spiritually. And I think that's one of the understandings, isn't it, of the native traditions.
Well, family is the keystone. And by family, it does not necessarily mean your blood relatives, your children, your aunts, your uncles. In the deepest manner possible, we are all related. You, I, the people on the other side of the world, people we've never met, as well as the rocks, the plants, the animals, and the water we drink. Everything is the same. Everything teaches everybody. We have something to learn from everything that's out there, and we have something to teach.
Which is a beautiful concept, isn't it? Well, it's not just a concept, it's an actuality, really. And a lot of people,
if you slow down long enough, you will find the confirmations of that. That's the problem today. We're too high-paced, too high-speed, too many distractions. Sometimes you have to stop and, as they say, smell the roses.
Yes.
And it seems who goes outside and looks at the leaves on the tree in their front yard, if they're lucky enough to have a front yard? It's amazing what can be seen in a single leaf.
I agree with you totally. It seems like things have sped up even more so in the last 10, 15 years in America, in my appreciation. Maybe I'm getting old and I don't like to move so fast on the highway, but it seems to me that everybody is speeding up so much. And I was telling my congregation, I saw four accidents just going to Dallas from Fort Worth last weekend to see my grandchild, and you know, most of them were caused, I'm sure, because people just weren't paying attention. Like you said, they're distracted, they're rushing to get somewhere, who knows why, and yet causing great damage to others, you know, and that's the downside, isn't it? If you want to be foolish, be foolish, but you need to remember that your foolishness is causing harm to others.
Well, the world that we're in today requires us to multitask. People have jobs, people have telephones, people have cars, people have computers, and sundry assorted other things. There are so many ways to communicate and connect with other people, but we're doing it so fast that nobody listens. I catch a lot of grief from folks that I work with because I do not carry a cell phone. This is strange. Here I am talking to you over the telephone. Yes, I have a telephone. I'm not a total Luddite. My cell phone is laying on my desk in plain sight for everybody to see. I simply chose to disconnect from that leash 4 years ago.
Right.
I answer my phone, my house phone, when people call me. I tell somebody I'm going to be somewhere, then I am there, and I am there on time. Honor and respect are the keystones. If you are willing to do something, you got to be honorable about doing it. If you tell somebody you're going to do it, do it. Make the time to be there. Don't just flap your jaws making words to get on to the next thing that's out there, because there's too many things out there. It's a wonderful world to live in. I live in it like everybody else, and I have trouble managing my time. But periodically, I simply stop and stare into an aquarium or a mud puddle or a tree leaf and reconnect with God.
Yes.
He's around us constantly. He talks to us constantly. We just move too fast to listen.
Well, there's a wonderful story about Mahatma Gandhi. You know, when he knew he had a super busy day coming up, he would usually meditate for 1 hour in the morning. And when he knew he had a really busy day, he'd meditate for 2 hours. And, you know, it sounds counterintuitive. If you're busy, you should, shouldn't spend so much time meditating. But, of course, he understood that he needed that stillness in order to help him through the rest of his busy day. So most of us don't do that, right? We're busy, so the things that may be helpful to us, like to slow down and contemplate, we throw those out of the window. And I know a lot of people, when they're ill or they're hassled, they don't come to church, you know, because they haven't got time for that, you know. I'm not in a good space. Well, actually, that's the time when it might be most helpful to come to church, right, to remember a spiritual dimension. So.
It doesn't necessarily have to be 2 hours of meditation. Mr. Gandhi had a great deal of insight and a great connection with what he saw the world as.
Right.
You can see people doing it. Even a woman, when she stops to put her makeup on, she may spend 2 or 3 hours putting it on before she goes out to dinner with you or something like that. But that's sort of a meditation for her. People get lost in thought, just stepping out the door and seeing something. You can meditate. You just have to take the time to listen.
Yes.
And most people have forgot how to listen. And by listening, I don't mean with your ears. Your entire body, your entire heart, your feeling, the sights, everything. Nobody pays attention to their feelings much anymore.
And I like what you're saying about, you know, it doesn't have to be a formalized practice. You know, that might have worked for Mahatma Gandhi to have that formal practice in meditation, but it's attentiveness, isn't it? It's being mindful to whatever you're doing any given time. And you're right, even if you're mindfully putting on your makeup and enjoying that process, that is a
and be mindful to what goes on around you, including the bad things. All
right.
Things teach lessons.
Right. Yep.
It's amazing. I've had the privilege, because of my service in the military, to travel the world. I have met other Native Americans of other cultures. You know, being a Native American, it just does not mean that you're one thing. You don't even have to be a full blood. You're just simply somebody that follows a way, a path, a certain way of living. Most of their history is oral. It's been taught with stories. There's very little written unless it's been written in the last 100 years. Kiowas look at the world different than Apaches do. We all look at the world different than Cherokees do. I doubt seriously very many of your listeners can even begin to grasp the number of Native American tribes that are in the United States. You know, we hear of a few, just like we hear of Baptists, Catholics, Buddhists, Shintos. All these people are living on this earth. This earth was created by a great spirit, a God, a supreme being, a great mystery. whatever label people choose to use. That's the difference with religions, is the way they label things. Get past the labels. Just enjoy what you live on.
Yeah, you sound like me, because we talk about this every Sunday, you know, the fact that you've got to get beyond concepts and labels, and that's when it all started to go wrong in the Bible, you know, not when Eve offered to Adam the apple, but when God invited Adam to name everything. Because once we start to name things, we think we've understood them, and we've really, all we've done is label them, and then we don't have to look at them again, because we've got a handy little label. So we have to move beyond concepts and labels and have a direct experience, right? That's the key here.
Well, you know, Grandfather taught me that a long time ago, and he gave me a little lesson for it. He cleaned the kitchen table off, poured two piles of white crystals on the table. He says, one is salt, one is sugar. They're named. Which one does you the best? What do you do with them? And I sat there forever trying to figure out, well, you know, I'll eat the pile of sugar. I don't particularly like the taste of salt. But it took me 20 years to figure out that I've got to have more salt than I have to have sugar to stay alive and understand what I'm doing. Kind of an interesting story for a six-year-old kid that takes him 20 years to get.
Yeah. Of course, everything in moderation, right? It's okay to have a little bit of sugar, but you're right, we can't live without salt. We need salt in our diet, otherwise we're going to die. So it is
essential. But if you stop and look at both of them, very few people can tell the difference just by looking. They have to taste. They
right.
have to
there
feel.
We go.
And they have to understand the labeling on it before they're even willing to do that. Take some stuff without a label once in a while.
So what you're saying is, you know, in its right relation, everything is good, right? There's nothing wrong with labels, because they can be helpful in guiding us through life. But as long as we don't see them as the ultimate truth, you know, there's something more than that. And I think that's, and like you said, our bad experiences can often turn out to be our most wonderful experiences, because we learned more. We were leaning into the sharp points. We were on the cutting edge at that point, and it hurt, but we were alive, whereas sometimes we're not even alive, right? We're on autopilot.
That's right. You're ghosting through like a rock rolling downhill. You have no direction. You just bounce from tree to tree until you hit bottom and lay there and wonder where you're at and what's going to happen next.
Right.
Well, usually at the bottom's deep enough, there's usually a stream down there. Now you get to meet all the flowing water that comes by and the wonderful coolness of it and the creatures that live in it. And eventually the water flows well enough that you sink to the bottom. Now you're buried in muck. And if you wait long enough, that muck's going to harden, the earth's going to shift, and that rock's going to be back up at the top of the mountains again so they can roll down the bottom and do it all over. Do you learn anything along the way? That's the trick.
Yeah. Very good. So, in unity, we believe that God is not necessarily a being, but beingness itself, you know, the presence, a presence, an energy, a spirit that moves in and through everything, right? And so we don't see God as a being on a throne or whatever, like some more traditional paths do. So is that the same as in the Native American spirituality, that it's more of a presence, a spirit within everything?
Depends on which way you look at it. Yes, there is a supreme being. The supreme
right.
being created this earth, put us here. This is one of the reasons that so many Native Americans claim certain areas as Holy Land. This is where they were put by the Great Maker.
Right.
This is where their history, this is where their lives are, this is where their energy comes from. The lessons that they have been taught come from this part of the earth. They feel out of place when they move somewhere else. If you grew up in Nova Scotia with all the trees and the waters and the cold weather, and you were uprooted to the Sahara Desert, you would feel out of place and it would be hard to communicate. You would begin to wonder what goes on. You would shift the way you're looking. But a good spiritual being would look at the opportunity and try and understand why he was put there and what's so interesting about this place that he is. The truthness of this is, since God, the Great Spirit, the Great Mystery, whatever title you choose to use, created this, put us here, why do we want to muck it up?
Yeah.
Why do we want to waste it? Live in harmony with it. Use what you need to. Be thankful for everything that you use. Even thankful for the things that you waste if you waste stuff. Even trash is useful. It's a broad concept to talk about.
It is, yeah, and we'll talk more about it when we come back from the break, because I think it's crucially important right now in the degradation of our environment. We need to start thinking differently about these things. I'm with Dee Wineman. We're talking about Native American spirituality, and we're going to listen to these messages from Unity for a couple of minutes, and then join us back again after that.
Unity Online Radio brings you inspiring programs on a variety of spiritual topics. Giving to the network is now easier than ever. Simply text Unity Radio to 72727 from your smartphone. You can make a one-time or recurring donation. Your gifts help us offer enriching spiritual programs that reach listeners around the world. Text Unity Radio to 72727. Thank you for your support.
Do you ask with childlike wonder, what is the nature of God? Who is Jesus? What is the Christ? How do we know what we know? When you ask these or other heart-centered questions about the non-physical, intangible aspects of life, you are, on some level, a student of metaphysics. New from Unity House and nearly 5 years in the making, Heart-Centered Metaphysics, A Deeper Look at Unity Teachings, is now available. This is Paul Hasselbeck, author of this quintessential study guide. Enjoy a deeper exploration of universal spiritual principles and truths, whether you are just starting or have been seeking for years. Each thought-provoking chapter of Heart-Centered Metaphysics speaks to truth seekers like you, providing essential tools to help elevate your consciousness and create spiritual transformations in your outer life and circumstances. Order your copy today from the Unity Online Store at www.unity.org. Then click on Shop.
I will leave this world as it is.
The world is full of voices, advertising, television, politics, colleagues, family, and friends. All are too happy to tell us how to live. In all of that noise, it's easy to miss the one voice that matters, your own soul. What would happen if you could hear that voice? Imagine the clarity, confidence, and courage that would be yours and the life you could create. Join Janet Connor, best-selling author of Writing Down Your Soul, The Lotus and the Lily, and Your Soul Wants Five Things, as she and her guests explore how to hear the call of the soul and create the soul-directed life. Live Thursday at 1 p.m. Central, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Go inside to find my God.
You've been listening to World Spirituality with host Reverend Paul John Roach. To learn more about Reverend Paul John Roach, visit his website, pauljohnroach.com. Or if you have questions, email him at pauljohnroach@yahoo.com. We now return to World Spirituality.
So welcome back to today's show. And you can find my latest article, Standing Firmly in Truth in the Midst of Tragedy, on the website that was just referenced, pauljohnroach.com. You can also find it on Unity Leaders Journal. If you Google that, that's where it originally appeared. So we talk about how to stay centered in the midst of terror and all the craziness that surrounds us. We were talking at the before the break about the environment and honoring the earth, which is sacred, and such a hugely important thing. And you were mentioning a little bit before that, Dee, that you know, Native American nations were put down in certain areas, and that was their home, and they resonated with that environment. And being from Wales myself and transplanted to Texas, I know the feeling because, you know, I get homesick sometimes for that landscape and that ethos and the whole cultural underpinnings of it. And yet I also have grown to love Texas and what it has to offer as well. So I think, you know, you blossom where you're planted, right? You still have that connection to the place where you grew up, but there's also something for you wherever you are, because, you know, wherever we are, there's the presence of God. So it's, you know, we're still home in a way.
Yes, we have this, unfortunately, bad habit of going to someplace new and trying to change it to be like someplace old. Instead of living with the new place and learning what it's got to offer and then build on both of those things.
Yes. Yeah, very good.
Yeah, we were talking earlier about labeling. We've got this really bad habit of labeling things. This is right, this is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
It's not our place to say. We didn't create this. We just need to learn to live with it and adjust to it.
Right. And, you know, Westerners in general, Anglos, I guess you could call us, tend to exploit things. You know, we see things as resources to be utilized, mined, exploited in some way or form or fashion. And we see that, unfortunately, in the degradation of the environment. I also think we do good things because, you know, the national park system in America is one of the great achievements, I think, of the American people. It's not all bad, but right now we've been seeing in the news, maybe not enough, but we've seen some of it about the clashes in the Dakotas, with the pipeline coming through there, and unfortunately the media doesn't always spend as much time on certain aspects of our country as it does on others. But I'm glad there is some notice of that. What's your take on that?
Those are all symptoms of a greater problem.
Okay, talk about
that. The greater problem is hard to define. It's, in my way of saying it, it's simple. Do we really need tennis shoes with flashing lights on them? Do we really need Twitter, texting, Instagrams, and everything else on a small electronic box that controls our life in our pocket? Yes, there are business applications for all this, and business is what makes the world go round and keeps us fed and clothed nowadays. but some things are not infinite. You know, we went through decades of learning about oil consumption, the gas crises. Guys, water is much more important than gas and oil is. You can contaminate it, and guess what? You're not going to live. If you want to stay on this earth, you need good, clean, fresh water. And it's not just over the oil pipeline. How much sewage do we pump into our rivers? The rainwater that comes off our roads that contaminates it. Fracking, any number of things that you can think of. We need to protect Mother Nature just like Mother Nature protects us. She's the one that supplies all of our food and living space.
And it's the same with the plastics now. You know, they're finding plastics deep down in the ocean. They thought it was limited to the surface and to the coastlines, but now they're finding it at depth, which is disheartening. So, you know, another misuse of a product, right? We may want to give. I know some cultures are now thinking about giving up plastic altogether, not just banning it, but not producing it anymore at all. And that's probably
a
wise thing. You know,
it still comes down, do we really need the tennis shoes with the flashy lights in them?
Right.
I don't know of any other way to get the concept across. In Native American spirituality and in Native American life, we teach an oral history. We teach through stories. The stories don't always make sense when you first hear them. Sometimes the moral that you get from that story is the surface moral to keep your attention, but there's always something deeper in there. If people would just step out their door and look around at planet Earth, I think, and think about it for a few seconds, they'd begin to change them in their ways. It took us centuries to get to where we are. It's going to take us centuries to heal it, if we're here that long.
Right.
There's just way too many of us.
Well, one thing's for sure, Mother Nature will be here whether we are or not, right?
I like to think so. I like to think that God built this for a reason, and he's not going to let it get totally disrupted and destroyed.
Right. And Mother Nature is endlessly renewing. You know, we can have these devastations that happen to the planet where, you know, volcanoes or satellites hit the planet and devastate it for a while, and yet all over a period of time, it's renewed again. After the dinosaurs.
Sure, no more dinosaurs, and we're here. What comes right. after us? The Earth will yeah. still be here.
Exactly. Exactly. So I have a great believer in that. That it'll be sad if the humankind isn't here anymore, but, you know, that's okay. We're trying to kill ourselves off, it seems.
God has told us that we will be here if we choose to be.
Yeah, there we go.
And that's a very strict term. We're here. We'll be here if we choose to be. Can we live with this earth? Can we live with each other? Past history's not looking too good on it, but there's always hope.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, I get along very good with my Vietnamese neighbors now. 40 years ago, 30 years ago, I wouldn't give a plug nickel's chance for that to happen.
Yeah.
So there's a choice everybody has to make. There's a chance for everybody out there. Are they willing to take it?
Yeah. You know, in Unity, we don't talk a lot about sin. We tend to focus on the positive and what we can do to make a difference in our lives, to transform our consciousness. And it seems like if you're focusing on the negative, you're missing out and calling it sin, labeling it sin. How does that figure in the Native American spiritualities?
There's right and there's wrong, and you can do a wrong, but you can make restitution and correct the wrong.
Right, okay.
The basic sin that I think you're talking about is a man-created thing based on certain religions. Every religion has their own version of sin. But if you look at them, every religion also has the same basic concept. One supreme being, one set of morals to live by. All the rest of it is vulgar carb created by somebody to get in your pocketbook. You abide by their rules or you don't exist. In Native American spirituality, you're a human being or you're not. You learn to do things. Everybody makes mistakes. You just don't try to repeat them.
Right.
If you can keep from repeating them, you're accepted as a human being and you get to do more. Yes, we've got evil people. We've got people that commit sins and do great harm, just like everybody else. We're not infallible. We just have a tendency to concentrate on the good stuff.
Yeah.
This is how you live a good life. This is how you live in harmony with the earth. This is how you improve yourself. This is how you speak with God. And you speak with God as an individual, not some supreme being. He's like your next-door neighbor. He'll talk back to you if you just slow down long enough to listen.
Right, because basically everything is speaking to us, right? We can
exactly.
receive messages from, like you said, a puddle or a leaf or an
insect. As the Lakota say, Omatakweashi, all my relations.
Right, we're all connected.
The Kiowas say the same thing. The Cherokees have the same story for it. We are all interrelated.
Right.
You don't harm your own family.
And when you do utilize it, you know, like, for instance, if you have to kill something to eat, then there's a holy...
You're thankful for it. You respect
its offering.
It's a
holy transaction, right? Yeah. It's not mindless. It's a mindful
respect.
Thing. Yeah.
If you go out and you harvest plants, you harvest wildlife, you harvest meat, you don't waste it. You're respectful for its offering. It has given up itself for you.
Right.
You know, if you're not going to respect it and you're not going to utilize it correctly, then you're giving it a chance to harm you. Be nice to things and they're nice back to you, I guess is one way to put it.
Right.
A little simple, but it works.
So,
one of the hardest lessons I learned from my dad was I love to hunt. And back in the 50s and 60s, we hunted a lot. Bird hunting was one of the things we did. And, you know, anybody that's ever bird hunted and the bird's flying, you shoot it. You don't always kill it dead. Sometimes you wound it or you cripple it. Well, with my old man, you stopped until you found that animal. You took care of that animal. It took me a long while to figure out that, yeah, I caused it to suffer. But if I reacted to it immediately and I took care of it and it was thankful for the offering that the bird gave me, the meals were pretty good. There was a few times them birds tasted terrible and I bust a tooth on a lead shot. So you kind of stop and you think about, did I do something wrong? Was I not respectful enough? Because this is not the way I remember them tasting.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a little gross for some people, but, you know, truth's truth. I still have that problem teaching people today. I sweat lodge with a number of people. They think it has to be done this way, this way, this way. It doesn't really matter how it's done, as long as you're respectful and opening to listening when you're there. Just like now. When you talk to God, it doesn't matter what you ask him for. Are you willing to listen to what he tells you? There's where the rub comes. Most people don't listen.
Right. And of course, this listening and looking with the inner eye, you know, was very much what Jesus talked about, because he kept telling people, you know, he who has ears to hear, let him hear. And like you said, it's not the outer ears, is it? It's that inward listening that leads us to truth. So he was pointing, I think, in the same direction that you are. You know, you've got to pay attention to what's going on at any given time, both in good and bad things, because the lessons are there if we listen.
Have you ever walked into a room and got a cold chill?
Yes.
Did you listen to the cold chill?
Usually.
There you go. See, you're working at it. A lot of people don't. They turn around and run, or they make up something to not think about it.
Right.
You listen with your heart. You listen with your eyes, your ears, your hands, your taste buds, and your whole body. And, yeah, everybody has bad days. You get out of sync. I spend most of my time trying to keep myself centered so that I can listen. And let me tell you, that's a tough job. I think I have more bad days than other people sometimes.
Right. Yeah, well, we all do. You know, we're all subject to it, aren't we? That's what we talk about in church on Sunday, is that we come to remember, you know, to remember who we are, what's really going on. And no matter how distracted our week's been, this is the time to reconnect and hopefully take that same consciousness with us into the week. You know, that consciousness, like you said, of listening, of paying attention, of remembering who we are, what we're about here, and what a gift it is to be alive on planet Earth.
Yes, the consciousness is a week-long job. It's not just for Sunday.
Amen. Yeah. Yeah, you have to put it into practice every single day. So I want to ask a question about, you know, you as a spokesperson today for Native American consciousness and people. Is there a sense, still a sense that, you know, the exploitation by the white peoples is still prevalent, that, you know, that there's still that sense of injustice? It's, you know, I don't know. I'm not, you know, I'm white myself, so
I
get
it. Well, I think I understand what you're asking.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah.
It's still there. Anytime that type of damage has been done to a people's psyche, a people's history, you know, the United States went to great efforts to destroy Native American culture.
Yes.
Take their kids away from them, put them in schools. I can remember growing up at the tail end of the school system where, depending on what church got the contract as to what religion we were, kids were vastly uprooted. That's why there's such a huge population in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. This was a technical school. They brought the kids here. They taught them high iron trades, but they didn't teach them anything of their culture.
Right.
The older people are dying off, so the languages are dying. When the languages die, the stories die. When the stories die, the tradition of learning dies. But it's no different than what the Hispanic communities go through, what the black communities go through. They just scream a little louder about it.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, the whites have done it so well, we now do it to ourselves.
Right.
But you can't say that it's a cultural thing, because no matter which group you look at, they're doing it to somebody else or doing it to themselves.
Right.
The whites constantly do it to themselves. If this wasn't true, then why are we having this political debate between the two presidential candidates? Each one's trying to do unto the other before they do unto them.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of trying to work together. Yes, sometimes you need a little bit of leadership and a little bit of guidance, but that doesn't mean that you get to tell me exactly what I'm going to do. Just like I shouldn't tell you what to do,
mm-hmm.
or how to believe, or how to pray, or what language to speak. So yeah, there's still a fair amount of distrust and just pure unwillingness to cooperate.
Yeah, well,
I won't go so far as to say hate because
yeah,
we're past the times of hate. Hate doesn't get you anywhere.
Right, that's true. Well, from looking out from my perspective, I can see that it would be pretty much justified, you know, because there wasn't a treaty that wasn't broken. At one point in my life, I read a lot of the texts around the exploitation, like D. Brown's book, you know, Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee, and some of the other texts that were written. And you know, you get a real feeling for the nobility of the Native American as opposed to the lack of nobility on the other side, you know.
Treaties are one of the things we inherited from the white men. That's their way of doing business.
Right.
In the olden times, if a Native American gave his word, that was what he did, whether he liked the results of it afterwards or not.
Yeah.
Or he just didn't speak a thing. The dishonesty is something that has been learned. It's not natural to anybody, any culture.
Mm-hmm.
But we go to great efforts now because of the world we've built to teach dishonesty, to teach greed. You know, the original Native Americans were more than willing to share what they had with the first settlers.
Of course.
And it wasn't just pure goodness of the heart. They were actually having problems with their neighbors, and they saw these new people as maybe an ally to help them out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so history is not always what people think it is. You have to truly study.
Right.
But it all comes down to different strokes for different folks, and we've learned a lot of bad habits in the last 200 years.
That's true. Well, you know, even my own culture in Wales, there was exploitation by the English for hundreds of years, and the Welsh language was considered to be unacceptable for a long, long time. You got beaten in school if you were speaking Welsh. So now,
yes.
Now there's a change. You know, the when I grew up, there wasn't many Welsh speakers except in rural areas. Now you can hear the Welsh language all over the country. And as you said, once you have your language back, you know, you have your culture back, because so much of the tradition and the literature is in that language, and so it's a whole transformation, you know, and we don't want to lose that. So it's wonderful when that comes back and it's honored. So yeah, absolutely.
For me, one of the brightest lights in the world is looking at what's going on with Hawaiian culture. Now,
yeah.
There's people that got totally messed over by the white man.
Right.
And they have a very interesting history that very few people know about. But look at the strides they're making to reestablish their language and their cultures and still be part of the United States, to be part of the Pacific area, to be part of the world. You can be an individual nation and be part of this great world. Does not mean that we all have to learn to speak Arabic or Chinese or Japanese and bow to their things. We can do it our way and still share with them and get along with them.
Yeah.
And the Hawaiians are a great example. I would like to be able to say that I know of a Native American group that is doing that much good. There's a lot of them trying, and there's a lot of them that are going to be offended at what I said because it's a matter of pride. Pride will get you in trouble just as bad as greed will.
Yeah, that's for sure. So what do you think about the interest that there's been in recent years by people who aren't from your tradition in your tradition, you know, going to sweat lodges, for instance. I know I've been to them, and I know other people have been to them. Is that okay, or is that kind of watering down your tradition?
No, it's okay.
What
of course, you've got to understand, you've got a certain amount of people that are out there in it for the money.
Right.
There was an incident a few years ago about some people dying under blue tarps in a sweat lodge out in the west.
Oh, right. Uh-huh.
And there are people here that run lodges and do ceremonies, and you're expected to give great monetary gifts if you go do them. You know, everybody's got their used car salesman.
Yeah.
But most of the Native Americans I know, that if you approach them with true curiosity and an open heart and are willing to listen, they'll share with you. They want to keep their culture together. There is a group out there called Cedar Clan that was set up years ago to teach certain beginnings of the Red Path to people that either had no Native American blood or had been so deluded and so lost due to private history that they had no contact or way to get back.
Right.
And I know a great number of those people, and some of them are some pretty good folks and carrying on some pretty good traditions now. But then you get a certain amount of people, they come in, they go to ceremonies, they go to sweat lodge, oh, this feels great, I feel so good for myself. Then they go back to the job and they forgot what they did and they go back to what they're doing. It happens with everybody. I think it's something that should be pursued and looked at. Most people are willing to share. So if you want to learn, come see me. I'll show you what I know and lead you on to other people, and if you want to learn from them and they want to teach you, that's a great thing.
So how can they connect with you, Jay, if they want to do that? Do you have a website? Or
no, I try to keep a low profile.
Right,
just simply okay. Send me an email.
Yeah, okay. All right.
So if I can't help you, that's fine. You know, I will do my best for what I can for some people, but maybe I can put you in contact with somebody that'll help you.
Right, right. Well, one thing I get from you, from listening to you and talking with you, is that, you know, you shoot straight from the hip, right? You tell it like it is. There's no pretense here. And I didn't used to.
I learned my lesson 30 years ago.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, everybody makes mistakes. Everybody's got ghosts in their past.
Right.
I learned my lesson, and I found that my life has been a whole lot better since I started doing what I should have been doing.
Right. Okay.
And so many people have taught me so much, why should I keep it for myself? It may not help anybody. And then again, it may help somebody. Who knows? I may be teaching something to the next Mahatma Gandhi or Mother Teresa. I'll never know. All I can do is live in today and how I feel about myself today, and I feel pretty good.
Right. So what have we left out that you want to get over today? Because I want to cover as many aspects of the tradition
respect.
As possible. Let's talk about respect then. And what does that mean for you? Because it seems like there's less and less respect. Like you mentioned, the candidates for president. I mean, the disrespectful things that come out of the mouths, especially of one candidate, it blows my mind, really, that that would be acceptable. Talk about that.
You have to think about the term respect. We talked about labeling stuff. Respect
right.
is another label.
Right.
I listen to people that I don't agree with at all. I'm a balance, I guess. I study pros and cons. I try to look at both sides of the argument. Because everybody from their point of view is right. Everybody on the opposite point of view is wrong. That's just the way people work. In the olden days, if you went to a council, you got to speak your piece, you said it, you said what was on your mind. If people listened to you and believed with you, then they talked more to you. If they thought you were trying to sell them a load of cow manure, they would simply get up and walk away. You know, and that was a sign of respect. Yes, I listened to you. I don't agree with you. I think you're wrong. So I'm going to go away and not cause you any problems. Respect is how you carry yourself, how you treat other people, how you treat other things. Even a rattlesnake, which is a poisonous snake, will warn you and talk to you before it bites you. So it's respectful when you hear that buzz, to stop and look and see where you're fixing to put your foot. Because if you're going to step on him, he's going to bite you.
Right.
If you move your foot and you go the other way, he'll generally turn around and go away from you, too.
Leave you alone. Right.
And so is that respect for the snake because you're bigger or because you're worried about him going to bite you? No, it's just the fact that you gave them a chance to speak their piece. You listened to them out, you thought about it, and you went your way. Out of every conversation, there's always one word that sticks in somebody's mind. Doesn't matter what it is. Could be something that makes them do something good or something that makes them do something bad. You influence everybody when you speak. If you're going to take the time to speak to somebody, you need to take the time to listen to everybody else. You need to help those that need help, that are willing to be helped, not those that survive just on being helped by others.
Right.
You need to take care of family. You need to live by morals. Your morals and my morals may be two separate groups of morals, but if we live by them, we're being a pretty respectful person. We're not. I'm not trying to force my views on you. You're definitely not trying to force your views on me, but we discuss them, and we meet on a common ground, and it's all done because of respect. We listen, we feel, we think, we give a chance, and then we honor what we do.
What about the idea of consensus? Because, you know, from my understanding, that was the idea of the council, you know, that you go around and around the circle and state your point of view, and until eventually there was some sense of, well, we can all agree upon this. We can all move forward with this consensus. Well, is that still...
That's a fallacy. No group of people are always going to agree on something. What would happen okay. is they would go around, they would discuss it, and discuss it till everybody had a firm understanding of the subject being discussed.
Right.
Then the vast majority would stay in that tribal camp. The minorities that felt extremely different from it would move off and live separately. Still be there to support the larger council and the major things of taking care of family, of hunting, of protecting sacred lands.
Right.
But since they didn't see eye to eye, they didn't fight or argue over it. They just simply went over here and lived.
So there was still room for the minority view then. Yeah.
There's okay. always room for the minority view. That
yeah.
if there's not room for the minority view, there is no respect.
Yeah, okay, that's good to know. Yeah.
It doesn't mean that everybody's going to bow to that minority review or to the majority consensus.
Right.
The vast amount of the older Indians that went on to the reservations, they fought to keep their ways. They did not want to move. I was listening to a Kiowa elder talk the other day, and he was talking about why so many of the older Indians, when they first went on the reservation, did not want to live in the houses that were built for them. Wonderful houses. Well, I didn't understand it myself until he started explaining some other things. All things in life are a circle of life. Yeah, okay, everybody's heard that. The sweat lodge is in a circle. The teepees are in a circle. Summer's followed by winter, spring, you know, spring, fall, they all go in a circle. And they just couldn't get over the idea of living in a square house.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's a deep thought when you think about it. It's kind of sloppy wording, but when you stop and think about it, it's a truly deep thought.
It makes sense, yeah.
That's just it. Most people don't stop long enough to listen. They don't show respect to other people, even the people they hate. Even in Native American histories, enemies were respected.
Mm-hmm.
Even the white man was respected for all his crap. You knew he couldn't speak the truth. You
yeah.
knew he wasn't going to honor a deal, but you still respected him because he had things and knew things.
Right. There we go. Excellent advice, isn't it, to enlarge ourselves? Because we only hurt ourselves if we dismiss
like,
others.
Like I said, 30 years ago, I made a mistake. I was lucky enough to learn from it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, very good. So, one final thought for our listeners. We've got like a minute left. What would you tell them, a piece of advice that they can do to take into their week to practice? What would it be?
Step outside and look around and actually pay attention to what you're seeing. Listen to the next person that talks to you and try and understand exactly what they're saying and do something that you wouldn't normally do. In other words, if you don't like to eat Mexican food or Indian food, try it. You might like it. If you didn't, at least you know why you don't like it now.
Yeah.
Too many people are too scared to try things.
Yeah.
Or to listen.
Yeah, very good. So step out. Step out of the box, folks.
There you go.
Pay attention. Yeah, very good. All right, let me tell everybody about next week, and then we'll say goodbye to Dee. Next week, Susan Addison joins me, and we're going to discuss her work with abandonment issues. She's a leading authority on that, and talk about her wonderful workbook. It's called the Abandonment Recovery Book. It's quite fascinating. I've been studying it recently, and a lot of good things in there. So join me. We'll talk with Susan next week. Right now, I want to really thank Dee for bringing such wisdom to the show. Thank you so much.
No, thank you for your time.
All right, and thanks for listening, folks. We'll talk to you next week. All right, take care now. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach. Join us every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Central to further examine the spiritual teachings and religious traditions of our world and to discover the universal truth principles present in all. World Spirituality, only on UnityOnlineRadio.org, the voice of an awakening world.
Spirit of Recovery is the place where spirituality and recovery meet, where we support your spiritual growth. Reverend Anna Schaus, Ph.D., interviews down-to-earth guests who share with you how they keep going and growing in recovery. Spirit of Recovery is the place to get practical tips and join in lively discussions on topics that matter to recovering people. This program welcomes everyone who wants to know more about recovery. Join Anna and her guests live every Tuesday at 4 p.m. Central Time on Spirit of Recovery, where we talk about what keeps you growing. Only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
This program is brought to you in part by Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas, celebrating the Christ Spirit in all people. Online at www.unityfortworth.org.
The world is full of voices, advertising, television, politics, colleagues, family, and friends. All are too happy to tell us how to live. In all of that noise, it's easy to miss the one voice that matters, your own soul. What would happen if you could hear that voice? Imagine the clarity, confidence, and courage that would be yours and the life you could create. Join Janet Connor, best-selling author of Writing Down Your Soul, The Lotus and the Lily, and Your Soul Wants Five Things, as she and her guests explore how to hear the call of the soul and create the soul-directed life. Live Thursday at 1 p.m. Central, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Go inside to find.
With all the paths open to us, it's easy to feel lost sometimes. Although the darkness of doubt and confusion may make the best choices difficult to see, there is within each of us a light that helps to illumine our way. When I stop and let inner peace be my guide, I am surely led to good, no matter what the circumstance. The peace I feel within myself paves any path I'm on, making even the roughest roads more manageable. I've heard that it's not so much the destination that matters as the journey itself. So in the midst of deciding which way to go in life, I go within. Wherever I turn, the signs all point to peace. Peace can begin with me.
To find a Unity Church near you, please visit our website at www.unity.org.
Sometimes you feel so alone and overwhelmed, you don't know where to turn. These days, it seems like there is no end to our problems. We invite you to connect with Silent Unity, the 24-hour prayer ministry where someone is waiting to pray with you right now. Since 1890, Silent Unity has always been there. No judgment or dogma, just someone affirming the best for you. Call 816-969-2000 today. You can also connect online at unityprayervigil.org.